you?
I'm great. I'm a bit hot. Today is the first day I've had any kind of illness in 10 weeks because obviously I've not been catching anything from anyone. So I've been feeling amazing. But unfortunately, I've caught hay fever from the grass pollen. So that's what's happening to me today.
Oh, no.
It's okay. I'm locked in a room so I think I should be okay.
Great.
Yeah. So if people haven't heard this podcast before, we should probably explain what's going on. We are... Well, I am. I can't speak for both of us. I'm more likely to be Leah Marks. And I'm a voice actor and a broadcast journalist sometimes. And sometimes I do some directing. I've done that once or twice. And what else do I do? I'm a very, very good cook.
That is true. She is a good cook.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about you? What are you, Nick?
I'm Nick Redman. And I'm a voice actor and voice and accent coach. And I do cook also too. But... sometimes we skill swap, so Leah cooks a lot more for me than I cook for her.
Yes, and you work through actioning scripts with me more than I do with you.
Yeah.
Babe, what is a good system?
I always say the reason for friendships are usability of the other person's skills. You know, there's no point having a friend if they're no use to you.
Exactly. And this podcast exists because we set up a social event for the voiceovers of Manchester and started trying to get them to come in various different ways, one of which was doing a little recording of why they should just come along to the party every few months. And then that turned into a real podcast. And now what we do is we interview people, we do like investigative stuff into vocal related and voiceover related quandaries. Nick, with her voice coach hat firmly squashed on her head, answers people's vocal problems in the panic room. So if you have a panic, you can send it in for Nick to deal with. And then also that's it. I think that might be the end of the list of things that we do. But we do lots of voice-related things. It's a magazine-type show for voiceovers. And this time round, this month, because we're out on the first of every month, we are taking you behind the scenes at the One Voice Conference 2020. Nick, what was your favourite bit?
My favourite bit was Kate Robbins.
She was brilliant.
What a wonderfully inspiring and remarkable and bloody great gal. You know, on that list of... people I'd like to be my friends.
Yes, so she was the conference's first ever female keynote speaker. Here she is. Let's listen to a little clip of her being introduced by Peter Dixon.
It's the incomparable Kate Robbins.
Hello, you lovely lot. I think I have to tell you what my favourite voiceover ever has been. For the money, for the duration of time it took me to make it, to record it. And that is the Ribena commercial where I played the part... Stanislavski method acting, a black currant. You turn up, you walk in. Hi, I'm here for the Ribena commercial. Yes, Kate, thank you. Take your mic. There's your script, and the script says, we're hey. Okay. Action. Woohoo! Thanks, Kate. See ya. 1500 quid, get in with royalties. Ha ha.
We did actually speak to her. We've got an interview with her, but you'll have to wait around the bonus episode in the middle of the month to hear that. My favourite bit, well, I had two. One of them was the socials, because they took the socials online as well as everything else. So they were held in Zoom, and all of us were put in a big room together and then flung out into little breakout meeting rooms with four or five people in, and then flung back in again, and then flung back out again every few minutes, just in and out. And it was perfect for me, because that is basically how I tackle conferences anyway, just like fling myself around the room talking to all the people. So I had a great time. But the absolute headline of the entire conference for me was something that I think only about 20 people were in the room for at the time.
Gosh.
Although like more will obviously have caught up afterwards probably. But here's conference organiser Hugh Edwards.
In the near future, it's not going to replace us. Maybe in the medium term, it's going to replace us. In the long term, it will absolutely affect our voice industry. There is absolutely no doubt about it.
Oh, and you can find out what he's talking about a wee bit later in the programme. What a tease. Also coming up, we've got a montage of some of the conference highlights, including a little audio diary from me just before I talk, which was a very weird experience. And And something else rather fabulous about this episode, because we're proper grown-up podcasts now, is we have sponsors, plural.
Oh my goodness. Honestly, I don't think you can know true love until your podcast has a sponsor. What I feel for Black Cat Music, BEE, and Source Connect is pure poetry. Folks, please do pay lots of attention to their commercials. Their support means a lot to us and actually genuinely makes this podcast happen. Also, you'll know when their commercials are happening because you'll hear this magical sound.
Anyway, first we talked to Hugh Edwards about the conference a short time before the event and asked him how he was feeling.
I've just been ridiculously busy. I mean, busy does not qualify it. I mean, Gravy for the Brain has, I think we've gone up around 25% since this whole thing started. Trying to keep up with the demand from everybody is pretty tough. And then I've got another business called Reattendance, and that is a virtual events platform. And so you couldn't
be more like busily placed on the axis of things that we need.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And we worked on Reattendance for 2 years to get the new version done. So it's not like something we just created, and it was always due for release in February. And it's almost like I planted the seed.
Do you know what I mean? Because you and 5G together, dearie me, what a team.
Yeah, that's right. What a good conspiracy theory.
Well, let's start chronologically, or as chronologically as we can. So take your mind back. Because around the time that things were starting to kick off, Nick and I were planning a live event recording the podcast in front of an audience, 80 people crammed into a pub function room, and we thought that was going to be fine. It's going to be fine, of course it's going to be fine. And I remember that you posted on Facebook, I think it was attenders of the conference group maybe, that for the conference not to happen, essentially the whole of London would have to shut down shops, businesses. It's obviously not going to happen. Of course, that's not going to happen. Do you remember that?
I do. I mean, we were about, we are, I suppose, 2 months behind Voice Over Atlanta, VO Atlanta, which happens in Atlanta, Georgia. And Gerald, who runs that, made the decision to postpone that relatively early. And in fact, that's now been postponed till next year. He hasn't even moved it to, the autumn or anything like that. So we saw that happen, and we were seeing things like E3 in America postponed very early. And at the time, I mean, hindsight's 2020, isn't it? But at the time, I thought it was just too reactionary, and that it wasn't sort of very British, and that we would soldier on. And so we made the decision that if we were stopped, then we would be stopped. But other than that, we were going to carry on because we felt that most people wanted to carry on. Yeah. And then we had a Gravy for the Brain social event that was happening in February. And that was a bit of an eye-opener for us because we sent out a survey to people saying, are you still planning to come to the event on Wednesday? I think this was on the Tuesday or maybe the Monday. And more than half of the people said, no, actually, I'm not coming out because I don't think it's a wise thing to do. Wow. And that really opened our eyes, and it was like, okay, the feeling is not as we had thought it was. So then we started looking much more carefully at it and thinking, okay, well, I mean, what are we actually going to do here? Because everyone's closing, and it feels like the industry is having a really rough time of it because people don't have anything to look forward to, and everything's cancelled. And it just didn't feel right to actually cancel it. So, at that particular point, we were all still in the office, and so we went round our meeting room, and Peter dialed in because he doesn't actually work in the office with us. And I remember sort of addressing the troops and saying, look, isn't it funny how everyone talks on a sort of war footing nowadays? It's weird, isn't it?
It's almost the only way to deal with it. Right. Gird your loins. Off we go.
Exactly. Anyway, I was addressing everybody and saying, look, we have two options. We can either cancel this. I think postponing it's going to be very dangerous. And we have actually taken that risk with the awards, which is now in, I think it's September the 19th. I'm even a little bit worried that we won't make that, to be honest with you. But we will see. I mean, if we can't make that, then we will do it virtually rather than just cancel it, because everyone's submitted their awards and, the judging's gone through, and I don't see why we shouldn't do something fun
with
it.
Will you insist on people wearing black tie?
I think that would be the only way to do it, right? we would have to. Anyway, so yes, I do remember it. And I said to them, look, we can cancel this. but it's going to have to be a full cancel, or we can go ahead and do this thing live. And, you know, all everyone's eyebrows raised, and they said, well, can we do it live? And I went, yeah, of course we can. And they went, great, well, let's do it live then. And so I kind of, I'd locked everybody into it without giving them the full extent, because really, I mean, the truth is, I didn't really know what the full extent was. But we do now. And
How long after that conversation, the rallying the troops conversation, did you make it public knowledge?
It was about 2 weeks after, and we left it a while, because whilst I'd got everyone to agree to it, I still needed to, I mean, you know, you can't go and make a big announcement like that and say, look, it's going to be completely virtual, and not back it up and then have to cancel it and say, listen, actually, we can't pull this off. So we did have to go and do some investigation. And it was at the time where we had this big tick box of everything that we needed to do technically, because we knew that the presenters would rise to the occasion, and all the sponsors backed us. And that was really good of them. So they've supported us, and I can't thank them enough.
What about the response from the people that had bought tickets? What was their response like?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be completely and utterly honest with you. We offered full refunds to everybody who wanted one. And as most of you know, the ticket price went down by 50%. And the 50, I've had a few people ask me, actually, why 50%? Why not 60, or why not 40, or whatever? And the truth is that we just did the calculation to take off the cost of the hotel and the food, which is eye-opening when you think about it, that when you go and pay whatever it is, £300 for the ticket, you're actually paying £150 just for the hotel and the food, which is quite amazing. But we discounted the ticket, we offered full refunds, and around about 30% of our people who had already bought tickets said, actually, I'd like a full refund, please.
Right.
Which we were quite pleased with. Yeah. And I fully understand why they wanted a refund. A lot of people, I think, really value the face-to-face networking component of a conference.
I know what I look forward to the most is just like being out for four days.
Right.
I'm really looking forward to the online conference, but I am struggling to work out how I'm going to be able to like lock myself away from the rest of the family and like and really focus for all that time actually in the same building. It is tricky.
It is, yeah. So then what we did was we changed the time zone. So rather than it being a 9 to 5 conference, it's now a 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. conference. Mm-hmm. And what that allowed us to do was not only connect with the UK, but also all of North America and South America as well. But what we've in effect had to do is create a TV network that is broadcasting 5 channels for 4 days.
Right.
Which is, and when you put it in that kind of terms, it's quite a mammoth task. We then had to really think about the production values, because if it was just, you know, 5 streams of Zooms, well, that's not, you know, it's fine, but it's not particularly interesting. So we got in some TV producers and they basically said, look, if we were going to do it in a TV channel, this is what we would do. And so we started comping those kind of ideas and getting graphics designed and rotational graphics designed and then learning how to use sort of TV studio equipment so that we could actually broadcast in a stream with things like adverts and talks and panels and being able to get people remotely to dial in and ask, you know, do Q&As and connecting it all into Twitter. So we've got a live Twitter feed on screen and stuff. It's actually a lot of work. And our MO is to just laugh.
Great.
When things go wrong, we'll just laugh, you know.
Leah.
Yes.
Black Cat Music are offering a 15% discount on Studio Bricks booths.
What? What do you mean?
Right, well, Black Cat Music.
Yeah, performing arts equipment shop. Been going for more than 30 years, yes.
Yeah, and they're the only UK distributor of Studio Bricks booths.
Yes, Studio Bricks booths. Brilliant sound isolation, excellent internal acoustics, super easy to install, and if you move house, you can just take them apart and pop them back together again with your sofa.
Okay, well, Black Cat Music are offering 15% off to our listeners.
Well, that's absolutely brilliant. How can they claim this magnificent discount?
Well, they just contact Black Cat Music with the secret password.
Which is?
VO Social Podcats.
Black Cat Music, VO Social Podcats. I love it.
Okay, here we go. And 3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to start the conference.
Here in the make, and I can hardly believe it's here now. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are in the world, welcome to the One Voice Conference 2020.
And I must just say thank you to all of these amazing speakers. Nick Redman is joining us for a talk and a paid workshop. Nick is, apart from being a brilliant VO, she is got accents down. And her talk is about Can You Do It Again in Irish, Advanced Accent Acquisition. And also, have a look out for their podcast. Nick and Leah do a really cool podcast. You'll be able to see it in British Voiceovers, the Facebook group, and they publicise it a lot of other places. It's very cool. Okay, our next talk, Peter, is...
Joining us for the Ethic...
I'm just sitting waiting to do my accent seminar and subsequent workshop. I have to admit, I'm a wee bit nervous. Like, I've got nervous belly and my palms are a bit sweaty, which feels really peculiar. So I'm... giving myself the advice I would give someone else in this situation, which is ground myself on the chair, feet flat, lots of out breaths, and doing a few wee shoulder rolls. So we'll see how we get on. Ooh. So I'm in room two. I'm waiting for myself to come on and talk to myself. I am having serious concerns about... the level of Egypt I let loose. So we'll just have to see what happens. I think it's probably quite good that I don't know or can't watch the other lovely professional things that are happening at the same time as me. Let's see how we go on. Oh God, I need another wee. All this staying hydrated. Nerves. I feel more nervous than I was before I walked down the aisle. Maybe I should be more drunk like I was just before I walked down the aisle. Jesus Christ, that was loud. I don't remember recording that snazzy intro.
Please welcome the fantastic Nick Redman for the advanced accent.
He fluffed my name, but I'll let him away with it.
Go away, I'm doing a webinar. Hi.
I had to open with a gag, didn't I?
Hey, One Voice, can I hear you?
Hi, I'm Susie Coleman and I'm recording from Brighton in the UK. Something that I really loved about Alexander Armstrong's keynote speech was a fact that he made about how musical knowledge can really help with being a voiceover artist.
Tell me a little bit about the connection between singing and speaking and how singing and music training has helped you.
I think it is. It does have a bearing on comedy, particularly comedy and delivery and impact. I think the timing and the phrasing of how you get something across, how you get a message over, comes from, in my opinion, comes very strongly from that sense of what is an appropriate delivery, how you phrase something. It is about understanding a piece of music really is not just the notes on the page, and that sounds a terribly hackneyed.
I know what you mean.
It's about learning how you can take any simple line and make it meaningful by playing around with it, but also setting your own rhythm and your own... People always say the secret of good comedy is timing. Actually, the secret of good comedy is presence, actually, because timing comes from presence.
Hi, I'm Dave, Dave Jones. I listened to and watched the One Voice conference in my studio in Bolton. There were two really, really great bits for me of the entire thing. The first one was Dave Peacock regarding taking direction in studio. Can you go faster, but also make it sound slower?
The faster one is told to read, the more projection you will often give as you push everything forwards more. But if you drop your projection, you'll be able to go faster and it'll sound more relaxed as you'll be shouting less. You can also add in speeding up the middle of lines and then slowing down on the end or slowing down on the important selling points or salient points. And that will sort out the faster but slower requests as well.
My other favourite was the ever godlike Stefan Cornicard, who was giving a talk called Lift It Off the Page, basically giving more life to text through actioning. But he also mentioned musicality and sometimes how it can be a little bit too much.
You know, people talk always about putting musicality in their voice and in a paragraph. I would say the musicality has to come from the meaning. The worst thing you can do is to go sing song when you're doing any kind of read, and to use that tone that is always the same, and a bit like, you know, British Airways, sort of, these are the exit and this is what you should and shouldn't do. Avoid that like a plague. If you get the music from the actual meaning of the piece, then you're on the right track.
Hi, I'm Mathilde van der Gaag. I'm a Dutch voiceover, and I attended the conference from Amsterdam. And as a kind of learning thing, I loved Kay Besser's talk about reinventing yourself. I love the way she was very realistic about it, that you can work at several things, but you have to know your strength and your weakness. And yeah, it was an eye-opener, because I always think, oh, I want more and I want to do this and that and that. And it really, you know, I've concluded, no, I'm pursuing what I'm really good at, and I don't need to do everything.
What are your interests inside the various genres of voiceover? Are you doing commercial work? Do you want to do promo work? Are you doing animation and you want to do commercial? Then, do you possess the skill already, right? Or if you don't possess the skill, but you possess the passion to do something, are you willing to acquire the necessary skills, right? I spent 2 years as a 50-some-year-old woman with a 10-year-old at home taking acting classes. And I probably spent about $7,500, you know, over the course of 2 years. But I was willing, you know, I took a lot of time out for 2 full years because I really wanted to become the actor that I thought that I could be in the realm of voiceover. So do you have the skill? If you don't have the skill, do you have the passion to learn the skill, right? And most importantly, then, are you willing to take the time and let those particular areas of interest to you grow and manifest and flourish and blossom?
My name is Jason Webb, and I attended the conference from Capitola, California, which is about 90 minutes south of San Francisco. I think my favorite bit in the conference was the talk by Mike Cooper about social media, and it wasn't necessarily the social media part as much as it was the talk about authenticity and being true to yourself. And that fed into everything else in the conference and how bold it is to be authentic.
It's not enough just to pump out content for the sake of it. I already see people on LinkedIn whose posts I immediately scroll past because I know that they're unlikely to have anything new to say to me. So I would like to invite you to consider the idea of balancing posting regularly with making sure that you have something useful to add. In other words, don't just add to the noise every time.
Hi, this is Paul Stefano from Baltimore, Maryland, USA. My favorite thing was probably right at the end of the conference, the group workouts for e-learning. I managed to get a chance to read in front of Peter Dixon, and getting in front of someone of his stature was just amazing. I cannot believe I had the chance to do that. But one of my favorite things was some of Johnny Heller's fantastic quotes in the audiobook roundtable.
It's important to have a male-female dialogue in there. And it's important to identify not by the title of the book, but by the genre. Thriller, male dialogue, adventure, humor, YA, anything. As specific as you can be, because the title of the book doesn't make any difference. It's the genre. Mm-hmm. And if you need some dialogue, because interesting enough, books have dialogue. So you need to show you can do that.
My name's Stephanie Cannon, and I was attending the One Voice conference from London. I really thought that the audiobook panel really encapsulated a lot of what I love about the voiceover community, and it just shows you that no matter how experienced someone is, like Scott Brick or whoever, and Helen with her brilliant experience, they're not so above an experience that they're not able to just break down the basics and give you some really good things to take home.
I think the important thing is not to think about the people that you're playing as voices. Think about them as people, because they have attitude, they have wants, they have desires, they have a personality. And if you start thinking about, right, what voice do I use for this, you're missing the way the author created that person as a person. And it's the person you're playing in exactly the same way as you do on a stage. You're not doing funny voices ever, hopefully.
I'm Liz Drury, and I've spent the weekend listening to the conference from my home in North Lincolnshire. One of the highlights for me was Eleanor Hamilton's speech, which is all about working in e-learning, because that's a field that I work in a lot. And there's something she said that really resonated with me and I thought was really interesting. She was talking about the rise of AI.
The listener is human. The writer is human. The key to imparting the information well is to use a human who understands the material and knows how to put it forward with humanity, with understanding and with intellect. Which is why the rate cards suggest that we charge around 30p a word. That obviously sounds expensive for a 3,000 word script, but you're not paying just anyone to read a 3,000 word script. You're paying for someone who has years of experience, who's maybe been educated to a high level. One of my voices has a double first from Oxford and spends much of his working life reading highly complex pharmaceutical material. Nobody can afford to get that wrong. You're paying for someone who's invested thousands of pounds in their own home studio equipment. They've invested tens of thousands of pounds possibly in themselves and who'll be there to correct a mistake if they make one. So they're available all the time. You're paying for someone who is so good at this stuff that they can and do it full time.
I'm Beth Davison and I was listening to the conference from Norwich, UK. And my favourite chat, I think, was from Tom Marshall, which was letting us know what radio producers really want from professional voiceover artists. And I just found it really illuminating.
Cast your minds back, for those of you that can, to 1988. Die Hard, Coming to America. Cocktail were released. Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up. And it was also the year that ISDN rolled out. 32 years ago. Yeah, 32 years. So the big question I'm asked a lot now is, ISDN, should I get it? Shouldn't I get it? It's not a straightforward question, that isn't. My personal advice is, if you haven't got it, probably don't get it. Because if you haven't got it, you won't have any clients that use it, that need you to use it. And also, you probably won't get an install now, because I know BT are planning on getting rid of it over the next few years anyway.
Hello, I'm Alexander Armstrong, and you're listening to The VoiceOver Social.
Now listen, I want poor quality connections, frustrated producers, voiceovers with state-of-the-art home studios but no way to connect them to clients. I want misery, fury, loneliness, and I want it now. Why can't I? Why not? Blech, Source Connect. Don't mention that name to me. It just works. Everyone asks for it and it records perfectly every time. They even provide live support, making everything too easy.
Source Connect, the future of voiceover recording.
So, on that montage there, in case you were worried, Nick, that nobody chose you as their highlight.
Who,
were you
me?
Worried?
I wasn't thinking about it at all. I wasn't feeling left out at all. I was absolutely fine. I wasn't having an existential crisis and doubting my life choices at all. I was absolutely fine, thanks.
It's important that you know that one or two people that I spoke to actually did choose you, but I got them to choose one of their other favourites instead, just for the sake of variety. Are you okay?
Who needs friends, eh? No, thank you. No, I appreciate that. And let's be honest, if you've not heard enough of me from this, you can just come join us in the Facebook group. She says, clang.
What is it? What's the Facebook group?
It's I say group. It's more like some kind of excellent community now. There's 1,500 of us, Leah. And they're all my truly bestest friends. So there. It's called the Voice and Accent Hub. And it's essentially, I'm going to put it out there, it's the only group on Facebook that is completely dedicated to voice and accent training for voiceover artists, voice actors and narrators. Literally the only one, as far as I'm aware.
If you want that, then that's where to go. And also, it's obviously free to be involved.
Yeah, of
right?
course it is. Yeah, it's totally free.
Yeah.
great. That is great. I'm in it too, and it is a proper little riot in there. And just another bit, one more bit that didn't make it into the montage there. Voiceover and games casting director Sally Beaumont. She has a condition that causes chronic pain and affects her mobility, and was talking on the equality panel. I really like what she had to say about looking ahead to conferences in the future.
This pandemic is a really weird experience for everybody, but what it also is an experience of maybe what it feels like to be a disabled performer in the industry. Mm. You can't go out, you can't go to networking events, and the only way you can really connect with other people is like this. And so I don't mean welcome to the club, I hope it stays this way. I'm not enjoying this at all. But what I mean is, all of the things that you're feeling right now are things that disabled performers are struggling with all of the time. And we carry this feeling forwards and say, hey, maybe it's okay for us to have conferences online, or, you know, to have remote attendance, things like this. And I think everything being a bit more informal, a bit more chill, is lovely.
Studio upgrades,
branding,
showreel production,
logo design,
production training,
website building,
studio tickling tools,
social templates,
studio upgrades,
branding,
showreel production,
logo design,
production training,
website building,
studio tickling tools,
social templates,
studio upgrades,
branding,
showreel production,
logo design,
production training,
website building,
studio tickling tools,
social templates,
studio upgrades,
branding,
showreel production,
logo design,
production training,
website building,
studio tickling tools,
social templates,
studio upgrades,
branding,
showreel production,
logo design,
production training,
website building,
studio tickling
tools,
social
templates,
studio upgrades,
branding,
showreel production,
logo design,
b-double-e.co.uk. B-double-e, helping voiceovers to be seen and heard.
Really brilliant also that the conference had its first ever female keynote speaker. Really excited about that. So well done, dudes. Although there isn't yet a 50-50 gender split amongst the speakers, actually it is now improved to the point where it was just over 40% women. Mm-hmm. But the representation in terms of people of colour was significantly more limited.
Yes.
And I found... it's an issue that keeps coming up in conversations.
Yeah, and me the same. So actually, when I caught up with Hugh after the conference, I asked him about that. And just a very quick footnote, listeners, he mentions in this clip a podcast called the Media Masters Podcast. And the reason why he mentions it is because they ran an interview with Peter Dixon a little while ago. And that's why. Just so you know, when that comes up, that's what he's talking about. Anyway, yes, diversity. Diversity, Hugh, what is going on?
We take diversity incredibly seriously. And in Gravy for the Brain, which is the holding company, if you look at all of the people who work for us globally, we're actually 51% women.
That's pretty accurate in terms of global balance.
Well, it's been a struggle to actually achieve it, to be perfectly honest with you. So that's the female thing. On the on the race side.
Yeah. Well, let's tell you what I've pulled together in this sense with four non-white speakers. As far as I could tell, three of those people could only be heard on like a special panel about diversity, which seems a bit skewed.
The first thing to say is that the comments that I've had from this, which I fully understand, are all about the fact that now that the conference is virtual and taking a global stance, we need to look at that in terms of global diversity. And I fully accept that. I think a little bit of history is needed with this particular conference, in that 80%, if not more, 85% of the speakers were actually booked in the UK and were the same speakers. And what we then tried to do were fill specific holes for specific industry genres from North America. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I couldn't just go and fire half the people who were already committed to speak and who already gone
yes,
and done all the speaks
Britain,
based on the fact that they were from English.
Within Britain, there is a range of ethnicities working in the voiceover industry and connected with the voiceover industry. You didn't need to go to another country to find people.
No, I understand that. So, for example, I asked quite a few people. The actual equality panel that you're talking about, if people read the title, that was actually supposed to be about disability this year. And at the end, it very radically changed pretty quickly. I think because of negative criticism on tweets about the fact that it was completely undiverse, which, again, I understand.
Right.
So what actually happened was, the very first year we did the equality panel, we did gender. The second year we did ethnicity and race, and this year was supposed to be about disability. But that kind of got carpet bombed in a way.
But wait,
that doesn't say that I don't need to get away from the issue of diversification, which is definitely something that I know we need to do. I think one of the issues that we face here is a balance between the best person for that job and fulfilling a balance in terms of different races and ethnicities.
Hang on, just a second. So what I've got in my head just is the podcast session, because, I mean, only because that's the field that I really, really know. And I'm not going to talk about whether I thought he was good or bad or anything like that, because that's not really what it's about. But when I saw who was taking the podcast session, I felt a bit sad, because as he's a white man, and without even thinking about it for a second, I can think of four women, and that's not even including me, that are at least as qualified, if not more qualified, to take that session. And it just makes me wonder how far you're casting the net if you can't find people to redress that balance specifically, and presumably more broadly as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are so many ways to look at this. So, for example, if we're talking about just that one particular session, Ollie comes from a company that produces the Media Masters podcast, it's called.
Oh, I've not heard of it.
Just like 150,000 a month or something like that, or per episode, whatever it was. And we went there because we loved that episode. But talks as a whole, you know, if this is in a physical sense, for example, and you go to ours or Via Atlanta or Via North or wherever it may be, people get booked for talks for different reasons, sometimes based on their experience and the fact that they're a safe pair of hands at conferences. And we all know that there's a large circuit of people doing the voiceover conferences around the world.
Yeah.
Then we have people who, which is what we try and do more, rather than just going and booking all the ringers all the time, because everyone's seen them at all the rest of the conferences, mm-hmm. you know. Rather than booking all the ringers, we try and find new and interesting people that haven't been to voiceover conferences before. So, for example, there was one person who I won't say who he was because it was brave of him to go and take the talk on. And this person is someone who works on absolute A-list BBC dramas that go around the world that you all absolutely know, in one of the best studios in London. And when it came to the actual talk, it was probably the weakest of the weekend. And sometimes you just don't know what's going to happen with talks, regardless of how, you know, how good people are or how good people aren't. You can't go and get them to go and write an hours long talk to a voiceover conference and then go and watch it and say, actually, no, you're not qualified, let's go and look elsewhere. You know, it just doesn't work like that. I mean, like, you know, for example, we picked Troy Baker, who's a white male, but when it comes to computer games, of the people that we approach, that we can get hold of, he's at the absolute top of it, and you almost can't get higher. You know, we also approached Ellen Page, but she wasn't interested. I also approached a dear friend of mine called Femi, who's a casting director and a director. He's a fantastic voiceover artist himself, Nigerian, and wasn't available. It's actually quite difficult to book people. Now, I don't want it to look like I'm sidestepping the idea of diversity, because I'm absolutely not. And I think just the feedback from this year means that we need to address that more in the future. What I would say is that what we're not doing at the minute is going and saying, OK, let's go out to the podcast world and let's go and interview or check out the top 500 podcast producers and then go and narrow those down. You know, there is a logistical feat with the size of the team that we have. It is the single most difficult thing about creating a voiceover conference is getting the schedule right, I have to say.
So what do you think the best way is to go about fixing it?
One of the reasons that we sort of end up in this situation is because primarily the schedule is created by myself and Peter through people we know or indirectly through people we know. And I think probably what's happened is that we're kind of at the limit of that now. And I think really for the future, what we're going to have to do is start either expanding the team or perhaps bringing in some kind of additional help, or I don't know, maybe some kind of committee or other people who can look to different areas that we can't necessarily see, to be able to find speakers who not only fulfill a necessary diversification and criteria, but also are just brilliant and can be relied upon to do really good talks that are going to engage people, you know.
So you'll remember we mentioned earlier in the show, the headline of the conference was from a talk by Hugh Edwards. Here is the first clip again.
In the near future, it's not going to replace us. Maybe in the medium term, it's going to replace us. In the long term, it will absolutely affect our voice industry. There is absolutely no doubt about it. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to change. We're going to have to adapt. The voiceover world is going to change radically, and we need to adapt with it.
So after that talk, which if you haven't already guessed is about AI voices or text-to-speech, as it used to be known, there was a Q&A in which Hugh answered a question we'd submitted. And as far as I'm concerned, for anyone working in voiceover right now, this is the most important 3 minutes you will hear.
I'm so tense.
The next question. Leah. Hello, Leah. when you say we'll have to adapt, how do you mean exactly? Well, what I mean by that is, in order to think about the industry as a whole, it's going to get rid of e-learning, well, at least some bits of e-learning. It may get rid of IVR, it may get rid of the more standard corporate reads that we have. But the way we're going to have to adapt is that the people who are going to come out on top, I predict, are the people who can act. There's a difference between voice acting and voice artistry. And voice artistry tends to be the kind of corporate-y, IVR-y type things. And then narration, of which, you know, and then the acting stuff tends to be character-based work, which is more animation, gaming, acting, audiobooks, that kind of thing. Now, there are obviously crossovers, and a lot of crossovers in some cases. But the people that are going to suffer are the ones that can't act, that just have a great voice and can deliver, you know, a piece of narration brilliantly or whatever. It's the human element that we need. So I would suggest that voiceover is going to merge more with dramatical kind of acting than, you know, in the medium term, future to long term, than the voice artistry we kind of have today. I hope that answers your question. Okay, Amanda Youngs, may I please ask, what roughly do you mean on short-term, medium-term and long-term when you talk about how it will be affected by TTS and AI? It would really help my career planning. It's a very good question, Amanda. I don't know is the answer. I mean, what I do know is that when I gave this talk last year, there were two companies that were developing TTS that I knew of that weren't the big players like Google, Alexa, Bixby, and those sorts of things. And bear in mind, this is happening all the way around the world in different languages as well with different companies. You know, all the search engines are doing it. Microsoft have them as well. So this year, I'm aware of somewhere between 10 to 15, something like that. And I would suggest next year there's probably going to be closer to 100, and then after that it's going to explode. So I'd say the short term, what I meant by the short term is right now, you know, in the next sort of 6 months. Medium term, I would say next year to 3 years, and long term, probably 3 years to plus. I mean, technology moves very, very quickly.
Wowee, what are we doing with our lives? You could end up a chef.
Yeah, well, there's worse things, I suppose, but it is mad. 3 years. I don't think any of us can afford to ignore this. COVID-19 has changed everything in a way that was totally unimaginable 6 months ago. So change does happen, and to have our heads buried in the sand about how affordable and ubiquitous this AI business is going to be is madness.
Yeah, we're all a bit on our pedestals about being human, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and how important it is. I find this whole thing fascinating, Leah, this AI stuff, because I'm still in the probably kind of granny knowledge boat about it, in the sense that, oh, but it all sounds far too robotic. And how could they really get it to actually feel or sound like it's feeling any actual proper human emotion? But you've sent me some remarkable clips.
AI voices that sound, that have like emotion in there. It's the real emotion. It's extraordinary. I'm really looking forward to our next episode about this, because we're gonna break it all right down as to what's happening, how it's going to affect us, what we're all going to need to do in order to survive, essentially.
Well, this is the thing, because you'd said to me, I'd said to you initially, like, yeah, but games and animation will be fine, because, you know, let's focus on that and make sure we've got some stuff to do with that, because they'll always want real people for games and animation, right? But who knows? I wonder, like, could you just like create an AI version of yourself?
What, and just ship it out to whoever wants it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I
like
bet
a
you can.
Like a product you have
would
to
you,
offer?
Would you do that?
Ooh. I feel like that almost feels like asking, would I ever have plastic surgery?
Yeah. At the moment, it does, I guess.
At the moment, no. I'm absolutely, you know, this is me and I shall be loud and proud and I shall not sink to, well, you know, I shan't change myself. I'll be proud of who I am.
Yeah. But then if it's just another branch on the making money tree, like a passive income branch, and people can still get you and they can also get that. I guess maybe it boils down to how much it costs, and eventually maybe it just won't cost all that much. We should save all this for our next episode.
Yes, we should. Yes, especially if you're joining us for the first time, please make sure you subscribe for free in your podcast app of choice to make sure you don't miss it, because holy crap, we need to think about what we're going to do with ourselves.
Yes, do. Now, there were two separate sessions at the conference on that topic of needing to adapt. So I asked Hugh how much of that was a conscious decision in relation to the changes that he knows are coming.
Yes, it was a conscious choice, actually. And it's because of one of the weird parts of human nature that exists, probably in all industries, but it definitely exists in ours. And the conversation goes something like this. Hi, tell me about yourself. I've been working in the voiceover industry for 40 years. I've done it all. I've seen it all. I've got as much experience as you want. I can do anything you need. Great. Okay. What are you going to be doing in 5 years? What do you mean? Well, all of your e-learning, IVR, blah, 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 is all going to go. And then they end up coming to me on individual mentoring basis saying, look, I just don't know what to do. You know, I know I've got to change, but I don't know how. And I think one of the reasons that the old guard get so worried about the newcomers coming to the business is that actually once they've learnt their trade, they're already on par with what the current market needs. And actually a lot of the old guard haven't yet adapted just to what even the current market is looking for, you know.
I am going to pick you up on one thing, which is that the idea of the old guard and their concerns around newcomers, what I hear from my friends who have been working in the industry for decades isn't that they're concerned about the way the industry is going itself, like the needs that they need to fill, because that's a separate issue, but that they are horrified that Gravy for the Brain specifically has brought thousands and thousands of people into an industry that's buckling from the numbers and is just a few years away from having the rug pulled out from under it. And for all the good that you're doing in supporting people through that and providing training and mentoring and all of those things, do you feel a sense of responsibility to those people whose livelihoods have been like directly impacted by your business?
Okay, well, there's two questions in there, and I'm quite happy to ask both of them. On the first part, that Gravy for the Brain itself has brought in thousands of people. Unfortunately, people are relatively insular when it comes to thinking about how big the industry is and how wide it is and how many companies there are and how much voice work there actually is. So I did a State of the Nation talk around about, in fact, it was in December 2018. And It looked at the sheer volume of companies and then the estimated number of voice artists that would be there in the world. So the number of companies from memory was 220 million companies in the world. And then you split that down for what we estimate would be, you know, even if you worked it out pretty, not what's the opposite of conservatively, pretty liberally, at, you know, a couple of million voice artists around the world, and then take out the ones that actually aren't very good at their job, because there are a lot of those, and then take out the people who don't really go and fight and hustle, and then take out the ones that don't have agents and so on and so on, and the ones that call themselves voice artists, but they're actually mainly interested in acting and this, that, and the other. And you get down to numbers where there are huge amounts of work for people. The problem is that they're all looking in the same place and they're not adapting. You know, if you're just looking to Global and Bauer, it's gonna dry up, you know? It's just the way it is. I had one, okay, I gotta be careful what I say here. I had one person who works for one of the three main radio companies come to one of our conferences in the last 3 years, so that should make it vague enough, who basically said to me at the bar, when I said, you know, maybe we should set up some kind of business card thing, and the person said to me, the problem is we use all these voices already, I don't want these ones, I want new people, you know. And so that's not to say that these people aren't absolutely valid, they all do fantastic work, and a huge amount of them are my friends, to be perfectly honest with you. But to answer the second part of your question, do I feel a responsibility to people whose livelihoods are being decimated by the number of people we're bringing into the industry? We are bringing in people and giving them good training, and these people are coming in anyway. Okay, they are finding the industry. So I don't accept that Gravy for the Brain has taken anyone's jobs away from people. And in fact, if people have actually lost work because of people that have been trained by Gravy for the Brain, it can only be because the people wanted to hire those people that Gravy for the Brain trained. And also, you know, you're coupling it with the fact that the online casting, online job site market has exploded in the last 10 years. We're not to blame for that. We are filling the hole that people want us to fill. So I think we're a bit of a whipping boy for those people who think that we're ruining their lives by bringing in loads of new people, because it's just not true or fair. And I think one of the important things to recognize is that Gravy for the Brain and the One Voice Conference are kind of the same thing. And we've always tried to do good things for the industry. Now, I understand that maybe some people can't see that or don't want to see that, but I think the vast majority of people do. So, you know, I mean, I'm extremely positive about the whole conference experience this year. I think it was a huge challenge, and I think we rose to that. I would say, you know, 95% of people are happy. It's funny, you know, I mean, when I'm in the physical conference, at the end of the day, after a full night's conferencing, I sit at the bar and I look around, and all I can see is people smiling. And then I know I've done my job well. And it was slightly different this year, because in a virtual sense, you know, I can't see the whites of people's eyes. But the way it translated this year was just looking at Twitter and looking at the hashtag OVC2020. And the responses on there were so overwhelmingly positive, and there were so many of them, that it was the same feeling. And I looked at all those tweets and I knew that we'd done our job well, and that made me really happy.
Thanks to everyone who contributed their thoughts and their highlights. And thanks to our ruddy, ruddy, brilliant sponsors, because we feel just wonderful about the podcast. Why, thank you. Black Cat Music, BEE, and Source Connect. And thank you to you, you big agent for listening. Don't forget, if you're feeling a bit weirded out by the whole AI thing, make sure you subscribe for free to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. We've got more on all of that for you coming very soon.
And as we mentioned earlier on, we're also sending some extra bonus material from the conference your way. We interviewed the exceptional talent that is Kate Robbins, so you can hear her talking about why during her career she's gone out of her way to work with women, and you'll also find out what prompted this delightful turn of phrase.
Don't boil your cabbages twice, as my mum used to say.
I've been Leah Marks.
And I've been Nick Redman.
And we are the Voiceover
Social. But since this is the official One Voice conference episode, let's leave the last word to Hugh. Here he is during the last few seconds of One Voice 2020.
Thank you so much for coming, for getting involved. You've made this conference actually what it is with your generosity and your spirit. We thank you on behalf of myself, Peter, and the whole team. Thank you. Same time next year? I think so. Okay. It then just stands with me to say, I now declare the One Voice Conference 2020 closed.
Together till the end of the road. Together till the end of the road. Together till the end of the road.